Greetings once again to everyone out in Greater Turdville. It is Thursday, Bastille Day. One of my favorite days of the year, as folks might be able to understand. Bastille Day here in Turdville, and it is time for another A2A webinar, bringing back one of our pals, longtime friend and Turdite, Ned Naylor Leyland. Ned manages some money in London. His current employer is Old Mutual Global Investors, and the fund that he runs there is the Old Mutual Gold and Silver Fund. But most of you just know Ned as a longtime advocate of sound money and a proponent of gold and silver, and it's always a pleasure to visit with him. Ned, thank you so much for stopping by once again.
No, look, it's a pleasure, and I'm pleased to say that the news on the front line is probably better than it would have been when I've been on before. Not on a personal level, just in terms of what I see amongst people who run money in London. And actually elsewhere, because I've been doing a lot of marketing for my fund. So I've been out in Switzerland and all around the UK. And the subject is now not only acceptable, which it wasn't before, right. It's absolutely being welcomed and asked for. And when I say the subject, I mean the sound money subject, the subject of what is going on to do with the monetary system, and how does gold and silver play into that, and what's going to happen, and all of these things that weren't just weren't spoken in polite company are now actually sought out by investment professionals, which is, I think, the best news I could give you.
Yeah, I mean, how about like an update on the ground? I remember in 2011 and 12, you had guys walking around reading books on the Weimar Republic, and then by last year, you know, you were just like persona non grata with a bunch of eye rolls anytime you said anything. What's it been like here in 2016 around your folks?
Well, I mean, it's as I tell the wife on a regular basis, you know, I from nowhere, having been the lowest kind of moron, now I'm a genius, which of course is completely ridiculous and quite comical, really. But that's the experience of being a portfolio manager in this space. Either, you know, people are sort of feeling sorry for you and shaking their head, or that you're their best friend and it's the best thing that ever happened. So it's important to try and realize that I think remaining somewhere in the middle is sensible, you know, as long as we can. If we start hitting the really heady heights, then we'll have a range up.
Yeah. Well, then tell me what you think. The miners have had obviously a tremendous run, as have the metals. And, you know, we follow here at TFMR. I just watch that HUI index all the time, and it's pretty much back to where it was when things really were smashed in April of 2013. Gold and silver are kind of almost back to where they were as well. So what's your strategy going forward, Ned? Do you just kind of continue to accumulate shares? How do you manage this for your fund back half of this year?
Well, so what I look for is there's a particular momentum signal that I take a lot of notice of and is part of the process of the fund, which is a very slow-moving MACD, which you've probably seen me put it about here and there anyway. It's a way of assessing capital flows, in my view, and it's very good for the equity market as it is for gold and silver, if you look at it over a sufficiently long time frame. And when I see that turn in either direction and widen and give me 2 months confirmation of a trend change, I consider that to be basically a tradable event. And that triggered for gold, for the miners and everything else back in late February. So you wouldn't have actually had the first push if you simply used that particular technical signal. It's an extremely good one on a back-tested basis. If you look to see what it does for you, it's a very, very good way of sensing momentum. So that is very strongly in our favor at this point. So any kind of pullback is very much within the context in my head of that. So unless that told me something else, I'm invested. The gold-silver ratio collapsing is a further confirmation of it. But what I think is particularly interesting is that Central Fund of Canada, certainly this morning, was trading at a 5% discount still to its NAV, which is my favoured sentiment indicator. So what that's telling me is we've got fantastic momentum, obviously you can feel the change as well when you're speaking to people.
Yeah.
But also sentiment is still poor. It's improving. I mean, the discount on the central fund was back at like 13% back in January, which is ridiculous, of course. I mean, the idea that you can buy that for that big a discount. But it's equally the case that when we're in full raging bull mode, it trades up to a 20% premium. So the fact it's still down at a 5% discount, I think, is really fantastic news. And the only other time that the central fund traded at a consistent discount to NAV before was back in 99 to 2001. So just before the start of the sort of secular bull market,
yeah.
It traded at a consistent discount. It's traded at a consistent discount for about the same amount of time, 2.5 years really, here. And actually it did cross to a premium briefly last week, but it's popped back down again. And I think we're right at that moment where it's going to burst across and start running at a premium. And that will tell me then that sentiment is following momentum. But basically, I'm waffling. What I'm really trying to say is that I think that we've now got a very good confluence. It's a great environment for prices to continue to go up. And also, I'm observing, like you are, that there's obviously a lot of dip buying going on. You can see that.
Yeah. Here's the other question I wanted to ask you before we get to everybody else's questions. You know, you're an Englishman, so you're right there on the ground in London. The whole world knows about Brexit. The whole world knows that Cameron resigned, and now we've got this Theresa May, I guess, is her name, as a new prime minister. As an Englishman, though, and like I said, you're closer to this than everybody else. What do we want to watch for next? Is are they going to move toward this Article 50 thing and get that done? Is this going to just draw out and nothing's going to happen? What kind of firsthand knowledge can you pass along?
Well, none. I can't really, you know, add to what you said materially. I mean, I think that anything's possible at this point. Do I think that the London political establishment want it to actually end up happening? And the answer is no. Therefore, is it possible that this doesn't happen? Yes. But equally, I was very surprised that the establishment, you know, allowed this to happen in the first place. So I don't know. I really don't know. It's all very confusing. But it's a lot different for a gold and silver investor than it is for other people in the market. I mean, on the day it happened, we were all in very early, and everybody else looked like they were in a car crash. I mean, obviously, some people had worked out this might work out quite well for us, and so we're coming over and sort of saying you must be enjoying this, which. To be honest, I'll be completely honest with you, I am enjoying. I think it's really good that people are now awoken from a sort of political slumber. So I'm all for this kind of shaking of the snow globe. But I think that's probably true of most of the people in Turville anyway, so I don't think that's going to be a shock to anyone. But I think the most important lesson has been how the sort of, the wealthy London crew who wanted to stay, they've reacted with complete bafflement as to how this has gone the other way. And I don't think that any of the political differences between the two camps have really even been approached to be resolved, let alone actually being resolved. So I think it's an absolute mess, but an interesting mess.
Do you think, though, the new government will push forward in the short term, or is it everything just kind of still just on standby and maybe it'll all, you know, hoping that it'll all just go away?
Well, I mean, yeah, you bring up a good point. Shouldn't there be a general election? I think it seems as though that's not going to happen. But then again, let's see. I'm no political commentator, to be honest. This is not a strong area of mine. I sort of just look at the whole thing as a sort of fiat mess. So I try and stay as far away from it all as possible.
Probably a good idea, my friend. All right. Again, for anybody joining us for the first time in one of these A to A's, the reason we do this and go to webinar is so that you can submit questions to the guest yourself. There's a questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel. You click it, you type it in, and I forward it on to Ned. There's already a couple of them in queue, but I also had a couple questions emailed to me, Ned. So if you don't mind, I think I'll start there. The first question comes from someone in London, a guy by the name of Simon. And Simon says he's just not sure of the whole precious metals are sound money argument anymore. Maybe they are just simply speculative assets, as some folks describe them. We gold bugs may win or lose in this racket, but who knows? So are gold and silver eventually going to be sound money, anchors of a system again? Or again, are they just speculative assets in a fiat currency structure?
No, G20 central banks have 18.2% of their current reserves, probably slightly more, maybe 18.3% of their current reserves in allocated bullion form. It's the first item on the list of central bank reserves, the IMF and World Bank, so it comes up before anything else, monetary gold. The existing monetary system is based on gold. When I say that, what I mean is what we have now was established with gold at its center, but the Americans defaulted on their debt in 1971.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that gold isn't still right in the middle of the monetary system. It is. It's just that everyone's kind of passed out and forgotten about it. So look, I think that they can be speculative instruments. They are still the center of the monetary system. They will be forever, in my view, because I think that the combination of their properties, what they can do for the individual, and the history surrounding it, sort of guarantee that. So, look, I'm firmly of the view that that sound money is sound money. It's as simple as that, really.
Yeah, let's go along with that. All right, next question comes from John. I'm not sure. Well, I'll just read it to you. You can tell me if you can answer it. John says that since you know or had an association with Jan Scoils, could you shed light on the differences between BitGold and the real asset gold-backed cryptocurrency program?
Gosh, what an excellent question. But I'm ashamed to say that I wouldn't be comfortable trying to clarify the differences. I think I would put myself in danger of making some sort of rather fundamental tech error. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to duck that. But I think that they're both interesting, and I think that that whole area is a sort of ongoing thing. And I don't know whether either is the final kind of sort of best outcome. But obviously, I'm a big supporter of both, and long may any kind of precious metals investment continue.
Yeah. Would you agree with me? I mean, I look at it and just think that anything that moves gold from unallocated leveraged paper derivative system into an allocated system is helpful in the long run.
Exactly right. That's good. I couldn't have put it better myself.
All right. Next question comes from Justin. And this is the first one that was submitted by someone who's currently listening. Justin says, "Hey, Ned. It seems that the recent central bank coordinations are having less and less of an effect on suppressing metals prices. Do you see prices perhaps breaking loose regardless of the central bank games in 2016?
Well, I don't know about 2016, but I think we all think it will happen at some point. I don't think there's any doubt that that's what lies ahead. Putting a time frame on it, I think, is a lot more complicated. But there definitely seem to be issues. I tell you what was quite interesting. I'm sorry to go slightly on a tangent here, but I came over to Toronto and then went to Ottawa to see the Sprott vaults in the Royal Canadian Mint. And the whole sort of world of minting and access to physical does appear to be really, you know, a problem. I mean, what they were telling me there was that the silver market is just on fire in North America and that everybody's flat out and can't keep up with the demand. And I thought that was, you know, notable.
No, I'm sorry. I thought you were just pausing to take a breath.
No, I'm throwing it back to you because I know this is something you know a fair bit about as well. I mean, I don't keep such a close eye on I mean, I do keep a close eye on what's going on in the physical market, and you and I like talking about it, and I think it's very interesting, but particularly with my job as it is now, I have to spend, you know, all my time focusing on the mining stocks.
Then let me use that as a segue to kind of ask a follow-up question of my own. What's your opinion of the goings on in London? I mean, we don't get GOFO anymore. Really, there's hardly any information that comes out from the LBMA anymore. But you at least communicate with Ken Hoffman every now and then. He who told us that the vaults were empty a couple of years ago. I mean, what's your sense, at least, of things on the ground in London?
Well, they were empty. I mean, that was true. Poor Ken got in terrible trouble at Bloomberg for doing it. Not that I should probably be mentioning that. But ultimately, you know, I don't know. I do know that from the meetings I have, the people I talk to who are involved in bullion banking, that there is a systemic problem and that it won't carry on forever. Exactly as to whether availability is really there, I just don't know. You know, what I do know, as you keep saying, is that vast amounts of 400-ounce bars to be added to, presuming they are 400 ounces, is that right, to go into the GLD?
Right.
Yeah, that's the right one. The vast amounts are coming in, and it seems that's coming from Switzerland, and indeed from there, it looks like the Swiss are sourcing a lot of physical from the Middle East. So it seems to me like the Middle East are restocking GLD. But exactly how London vaults are really interfacing with all this, I'm not sure. I noticed that Ronan wrote something about potentially GLD having some metal at the Bank of England. That seemed quite interesting. It's worth having a look at if you haven't read it. But I can't claim to have a really special insight because it's a very fractured sort of esoteric thing. Yeah. You know, it's hard to explain, really.
Yeah. Well, all right. Then I'm going to use that as a segue to a follow-up question from Justin, same guy that asked that first question. What do you make of this chap from the Bank of England who is going to be the next head of the LBMA? I mean, is that just coincidence? Is just, you know, he put in his resume and they hired him? Or is there some kind of oddball connection there between the fact that he was with the Bank of England and now he's going to be the head of the LBMA?
Well, being honest, I didn't even know that it happened. So I'm afraid Justin's got me on a skewer with both questions, I think. I don't know the answer to that. The truth is that...
It was just announced yesterday, so...
It was yesterday, was it? But you know, the truth is that ultimately, obviously, the LBMA and the Bank of England are, you know, one entity, really. So, I mean, it's not... I wouldn't say it was a shock.
Yeah, good point. All right, let me move on to the next question. This one comes from Andrew. I think he's just mainly asking your personal opinion. What are your thoughts on Boris Johnson?
Boris Johnson is, he makes good copy, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
So he, you know, and I suppose if for no other reason, then, you know, I applaud his natural enthusiasm and ability to shake off any anybody else's view of him. So I think, you know, that he definitely has strengths. But again, you know, this politics thing isn't really my area.
Yeah. You might as well worry about stuff where you at least feel like you have some measure of control or real interest. They're going to, politicians are going to do whatever they want to do anyway.
Unfortunately, yeah.
One more question here from JQ, who actually emailed one of the questions. So you just want, you know, I talk a lot about the clear, what is clear to me at least, HFT-driven connection between the dollar yen and the paper price of the gold derivative. It seems clear on the chart. You get it's even you've seen it this week. What do you think that connection is? Why would a computer be programmed to, you know, buy the dollar yen and sell gold? I mean, what? Why are those two connected? Why is there a correlation?
Well, it's a good question. For me, I would argue that the way that seems to work and the role of the yen versus gold, to me, this may not be nefarious in the way you think. It may just be that it's the Japanese state trying to manage its own affairs on some level. But goodness knows. I mean, it's a mystery, isn't it? I agree. I mean, it's very interesting to look at. But then again, I would also say that you could find, you know, I think it's fair to say you could find other rather random correlations. If you looked, I think you'd find that there were quite a few more of these that wouldn't involve gold. And so I'm not sure how these algos work. I did show one of my colleagues runs a it's an algorithmically based fund. It's not HFT, but they do use algorithms. I showed it to him and asked him, and he said, "Yeah, that looks quite interesting." But it didn't exactly surprise him, or you know, he didn't see fit to say much about it.
Yeah. All right. Next question from Chris. Just wants to know what you think about NERP. We're up to whatever it is, $14 trillion of negatively yielding global debt. Is that going to continue, or do you think that is like a peak and now rates are going to move back more toward positive?
No, I think it's going to continue. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I see that as almost being sort of drowning man sort of stuff. I mean, it looks like someone who's got lead weights on his feet and is going down the bottom of the Thames. I mean, it's the nature of the fixed interest space, and my understanding. I understand fixed interest quite well. You know, it's way too much money. It's not retrievable because of where we are, and I think it's a sort of slow-running poster child of the end of the Keynesian experiment, as you put it.
Would you characterize it? I've said it this way a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. I think it is the most important fundamental factor that maybe we've ever seen in the physical gold market. And leading us towards finally a breakage ultimately of the system. But do you think it is one of, if not the most important fundamental factor, this NERP?
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, as I say, it's the lead weight. It's the lead weight for a very brittle old man sort of who never could swim in the first place. I mean, it's only heading one way. I've always said that at some point in this sort of situation or this long-running debacle, that fixed interest investors would buy physical gold. And I can tell you I've seen that starting on a very small level, but I am seeing it. People I'm talking to very nearly had an allocation from a fixed interest fund, but the fund manager had to move on. So it didn't happen. But, you know, this is something which is slowly happening. And apart from anything else, it's not a surprise, because if you work in fixed interest every day and you're watching this, and by the way, these people are very smart. They in my view, are you know, sort of high-end financial professionals, really, the guys that run bond funds and trade fixed interest. So they understand all of this much better than people that work in equities. People who work in equities have very little interest or understanding in the monetary system, whereas bond investors obviously are bound to be interested and are. And they're a lot of them own gold, a lot of them want to buy more, and they get it, and it's clearly, quite rightly, the biggest driver of all on a narrative level, I suppose, or on a real level as well, for high prices, because the, you know, opportunity cost of your near cash instrument versus your gold bar is consistently now going in favor of a gold bar on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So it's all very, very promising for those of us that are, you know, investing in the space.
Is it just cognitive dissonance, Ned, to say I'm if I'm a money manager or a pension fund or something in Germany, and yesterday I bought some of those negatively yielding German bonds, so I'm guaranteeing to get less of my money back at maturity. Am I also taking on all of the risk of the euro currency for the next decade or whatever it is? I mean, is it just cognitive dissonance? They don't even think about the logic of owning something like gold? I mean, why is it that doesn't even seem to enter into these folks' minds yet?
Well, I think that the professional component of this obviously makes a big impact, which is people have spent all their life looking at a particular asset class, and they will find a way of justifying why it's all right in their own minds anyway. But, you know, what's more is they want to keep their jobs. So, you know, what are they going to do? They've got to make do with a ridiculous environment. So most people who are investing in the sector in fixed interest are doing it because they have no choice. They have to hit their mandate. You know, people, you have very specific mandates for funds, and however you're going to do it, you're going to do it. But I would say, like I said earlier, that the people that work in the bond market, this is why you're seeing, by the way, L. Arian and Bill Gross and all these people talking about gold and admitting, if you read what they say, that this is looking very ugly. These guys know, that's why. But if you speak to the average equity fund manager, they're not going to agree, and they're going to say it's fine.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose, you know, you buy those German bonds, and I guess, and in a sense, this kind of makes them compare favorably to gold, because really you're only buying those bonds for capital appreciation in the hope that the Bund is going to minus 100 or minus 150 basis points, you know? So maybe that's at least starting them down the path to look at something like gold. We'll see. All right, I've got just a couple of questions left in queue. I'm not sure if this is in your wheelhouse or not, Ned, but I'll ask it because Larry submitted it. Apparently, there's rumors today that those 28 pages of redacted 9/11 Commission report, or I guess that wasn't 9/11, it was redacted out of the Senate Intelligence Committee report. 28 pages having to do with the Saudis. Apparently, that's going to get released tomorrow. Do you think that could risk the petrodollar at all?
Well, look, if that happens tomorrow, I'll be surprised. I think there's been quite a lot of talk about that for quite a long time. I mean, I'm certainly fascinated to hear that would happen. I, for what it's worth, I wouldn't be paying much attention to it in terms of whether I think it's right or real or meaningful or the true story or anything.
Right.
But that's an interesting moment should that come about. I don't know if that's going deeply enough into the answer, but, you know, for me, I don't really take anything at face value, even if there are 28 pages of redacted information about the Saudis. Ultimately, we're so far down the line with all of this.
Yeah.
That I just get. But let's focus on gold and silver and where that's going, what it can do for us, I think.
Exactly. All right, two questions left. One from John. Just wants to know if it's legal and proper for you to share any mining stocks that you like with all of us.
I don't do that. I'm sorry to say that. But what I will do is give you some sort of roundabouts, which I think would be, you know, hopefully be worthwhile.
Sure.
First thing is this: I don't buy any individual mining stocks myself. I used to, but I don't do it now, and that's because I actually understand it a lot better now. And I work with someone who's really fantastic and really understands, you know, mining companies on an incredibly detailed level. He used to be a mine engineer. And he builds, you know, very high quality models based on what the mining companies are doing. So I don't buy individual mining stocks. I'm very happy to put money in my own fund. If I wasn't running a fund, I'd put it in someone else's rather than buying individual shares. But if you really desperately want to do it, I would say that buying stuff that is in production always trumps buying explorers. It slightly depends. I have a slightly skewed view now because I run a reasonable amount of money. And if I want to buy an explorer, I'm probably never going to get my money out because the chance of it being actually bought out, given my liquidity event, is slim, even if I think my judgment's very good. You know, the reality is it doesn't happen that often. And so I think that they're more natural kind of speculative vehicles for retail investors that if they desperately want to do it, then fine. But I would always say you're going to get a better return over a medium term by buying a fund that invests in these things than doing them yourself. And that is truly a genuine, feeling that I have.
Yeah, well, and diversified too. All right, one last question, and I appreciate you. I mean, it's 6:37 at night in London, and you've got a family, you've got stuff you've got to do, and there's golf to watch. So one last question. let's see, this comes from Sanford. He wants to know, what's the deal with that value-added tax in the UK? Why do they have it anyway? Is it to discourage people from owning silver? Or is there some other reason?
It's a very valid point. I think it's ridiculous. And do I think it's nefarious? Probably not, really. I would have thought if there was some big plot about it, you'd find that more countries would be doing it as well to try and stop people from buying physical silver. I think it's a sort of strange quirk, really. It is extremely annoying, but the joy of owning physical silver well outweighs that. And what's more for me, I'm sorry to you because I bought basically almost all the silver I ever bought. I bought right at the beginning of the move, so back in 2003. And I remember very clearly speaking to the bullion dealer and him going, "You're absolutely mad. What are you doing?" And I'd be like, "What do you mean?" He goes, you're paying like 40% over spot to get hold of this stuff. I'll give you a silver certificate and you don't have to do any of this." And, and I looked at him, obviously knowing fairly well already what was going on, and I was just like, "No, I'm not in this for 40%. And of course, it was whatever, $4.50 an ounce at the time. With the benefit of hindsight, I'm not so fussed by the VAT. But what I will also say, by the way, is probably my best silver investment around that period when I sort of accumulated were junk bags, and you don't pay VAT on those. So I did wise up. And you can buy pre 46, I think it is, old coins in the UK, and you get the full silver weight at spot plus all the other metal for free, and they're much more beautiful. They're lovely old coins, and you don't pay anything on top of that. So I did wise up.
I like it. All right, Ned. Before we get to the final four, I do have to alert you that Euro Buddha has informed me that he just put a kettle on and wants to know if you'd like to drop over for a spot of tea. So I just thought I would.
You're right, buddy. Make me a cup of tea, but I don't think I'm going to make it over this evening.
All right, fair enough. All right, my friend, as we go to wrap up, you know how we do this. You get the final four on the way out, just four quickies that you can usually answer with a sentence or just a word or two. If you're ready, can I lay them on you?
Yep.
All right. Which will occur first? Pound parity with the dollar or euro parity with the dollar?
Pound parity with the dollar, in my view.
Lots
of complicated stuff around that, which could go on for hours, so I'll just stick with pound.
All right, fair enough. You're spotting the euro, pretty big lead. That's a bold call, my friend. But I'll put you down for pound parity. All right. Second question. A few of these might get back to my experience over there in your beautiful country a few weeks back. couldn't help but notice when I went into Westminster Abbey all of the famous Englishmen that are buried there. Any chance you'll be buried there in the future?
No.
You don't think so? Not next to Isaac Newton? No?
No. Please no and no.
I'd put you over there in that poet and painter's corner, you know, where some of those cats are. But okay, if you don't think you're going to go, that's fine. All right. Better subway system, the tube or the metro?
Well, I think the tube is remarkable considering how old it is. So I'll go with the tube.
Fair enough. It's like sitting on a sofa and going sideways. We all concluded. Because you get like a little air comes in, you know, as it goes. It's remarkable. Yeah, I agree with you. I like the tube. And I think all of the Fergusons would go along with that. And finally, I'm going to cross out what I had as number four. And I'm going to go with this question that was submitted by a listener for as a final four question. Do you carry a three iron or a hybrid?
Interestingly, I don't carry either.
Are you one of those guys that has like all hybrids in his bag?
No, I have not. I hate hybrids. I think they're horrible. So I have a 3-wood and a 5-wood, and then I started a 4-iron and have an extra wedge.
I even had a 2-iron for a while that I used to carry, but I'm too old for that. But now I'm.
Yeah, you have to be able to play golf to have a 2-iron. I mean, you know, this is the difference, which I keep trying to explain to you. You can actually play. You know, if you can't a 3-iron. I mean, that's just impossible for a proper hacker like me. You know, a 3-iron is not a club you need to be brandishing.
I'll let you in on a secret. I bet I could go back into my basement and actually dig out my old Ping I 1-iron. When I finally come over and hit the links with you, I might bring it with me just for fun.
Well, I'd like to see one hit it, definitely.
Yeah, it's like hitting a butter knife. And Eurobuddha lastly wants to add that you are dead wrong. The euro is going to parity with the dollar.
Well, he has strong views like me. Let's put it like that.
Fair enough. All right, my friend. Great fun as always. I want to wish you a nice rest of your summer. Get some rest, take a little holiday perhaps, and then come back with your game face on. I think the rest of 2016 is going to be crazy. I mean, it's been crazy so far. It may get even crazier. But all the best to you, my friend. Thank you so much for your time today.
No, don't be silly. It's a pleasure to be here. And as I say, nice to be breaking bread while things are looking rather rosier than they have for a while.
It's been a while, that's for sure. Let's hope it continues. All right, all the best, my friend. Have a great rest of your day.
Take care.
All right, and thanks everybody for listening. We'll do this again next week.